go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is Tuesday, the fourth day of February, 2014. Titanic Tuesday, that is, here on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find the chat room. That is where you will find, oh, goodness me, you'll find the Listen Live button. And thanks to John Fox, the newly revamped posting system there that I, last night, learned how to use. Oh, he can be taught. And I'm having a great good time with it. So if you want to see whatever's crossing what passes for my mind on any given afternoon, you can just wander by and see what's grabbed my fancy in the way of news stories. Also, of course, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the PayPal button. The PayPal button and its accompanying traditional mail address are how we continue to be able to create this ongoing conversation now into its 10th year. Okay? Yeah. So last night, we had Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge on the table. Shirley offering to put up $150 in matching funds for the first $150 that came in. Unfortunately, only $30 came in. So that means we've got $120 to go this evening to meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge and stay ahead of, well, try to, no, we're not getting ahead. We're trying, at this point, trying to keep even with the month of February. So there you go. Remember, of course, I mean, I'd like it if it was otherwise, but we can't send you a box of chocolates or a mouse pad or a rubber brick to throw around. No, none of that. This is just a straightforward effort to where your kind contributions keep this conversation going. So thank you one and all very, very much, and I hope we can meet the remaining $120 of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge this evening. If you want to go with the traditional mail route, well, that address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in Bravo, PMB 318. Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801, with the gentle reminder that checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not see them, but rather should be made payable to The Horn, Head on Communications, something like that, which makes it a lot easier for Boss Man Wayne, after he has put his hand into the mailbox and hopefully not found an echo or a spider, and retrieve your correspondence, and then he can deal with it to for bill-paying purposes. Thank you. Now, Titanic Tuesday, as noted. I got a feeling. I keep saying it. It keeps turning out to be true. I get a feeling we're going to be busy this evening. We have stories. The ongoing West Virginia water disaster will simply not go away. And that might have something to do with the toxic, pernicious nature of methyl cyclohexane methanol and its ability to stick to the insides of pipes and whatnot. And you know, just because the water gets poisoned, it's no reason to think that it's going to be anything but business as usual in the utterly corrupt, wholly conflicted, patently opaque world of West Virginia politics. In the midst, it turns out, thanks to reporting by Ken Ward, and have I mentioned lately what do we got to do to get this guy a Pulitzer? I could say it in coarser terms, but I prefer not to, at least so early in the program. But no, this is journalism the way journalism should be done. What Ken Ward is presently doing with the West Virginia water disaster and what he has done for many, many years otherwise. This is a matter of this is upholding the obligations of the Fourth Estate. What's going on here? This is on the street beat reporting, tireless bird dogging of an issue, asking questions that people in power would rather not have asked, that sort of thing. And in part, it's because reporters don't exist, journalists don't exist outside their own communities. The good ones at least, don't walk around in a bubble. So, when Ken Ward tells you that they're not drinking the water at his house, it's not because he's trying to create publicity, it's because of the paucity of information there is out there about whether or not water is safe to drink in that area, or bathe in, or cook with, or. I mean, honest to God, when I think about surgical suites, back when Governor Earl Ray Tomlin was dithering for however many hours, 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, whatever it was, trying to decide whether or not it would upset his corporate clients. I mean, constituents. I mean, owners. I mean, well, friends. If a declaration was issued, surgical suites were probably being mopped down with that water. Yeah, just think about that. Surgical suites. Blech. But anyway, Governor Earl Ray, who should long since have resigned his position, Governor Earl Ray, as Ken Ward notes, held a news conference, a press conference 2 weeks ago to announce the law that he was going to propose regarding the things that led to the Elk River water disaster. And he said, and this is the quote from the press conference on Monday, January 20th. He said, "This proposed legislation includes reasonable common sense provisions to regulate above ground storage tanks across the state, including those located in areas of critical concern near our public water supply and distribution systems." Okay, so I think we're all politically grown up enough in this family commune to understand that Earl Ray probably did not sit down and take a pencil out and kind of lick it a little bit on the end of his tongue and sit down to writing him a tank regulating bill. Doesn't work that way. No, folks were ready to help him write that bill, and he reached out to his friends to write that bill. They had a little meeting over at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, Protection. Protection. Oh, that's a real knee slapper. To go over the bill, what had done been writ. And the way they described it, this little meeting they had the day before the bill was announced, was it was going to be a meeting with stakeholders. Not meaning, of course, people with pitchforks and torches and wooden stakes who would... No. No. Stakeholders, as defined by Governor Earl Ray, are not, for instance, a mother who had lived in terror ever since making her baby a bottle of formula with poisoned water on the morning of January 9th, 2014. She was not a stakeholder. Nope. The nurses at the nurses' station who made coffee for the residents of a nursing home in Charleston and made it that morning with that poisoned water, they weren't stakeholders either, oddly enough. No, It turns out that when Earl Ray is talking about stakeholders, Earl Ray is talking about the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce and the West Virginia Oil and Gas Association and the West Virginia Coal Association. You remember the West Virginia Coal Association with the disaster unfolding before us in the earliest hours of it. The West Virginia Coal Association tweeted, "If it's good enough to wash coal, it's good enough to wash me." That West Virginia Coal Association. Yeah. So, let's see. No mamas were stakeholders. No health care providers were stakeholders. Nobody who lived around the general area where the tank farm was and were breathing that poison for God knows how long, because some have said it was early in the morning, some have said they were smelling it before that day, some have said 2 days, some have said 2 weeks, you know, like back to Christmas. Oh, look. Yeah, must be Christmas. I smell licorice. Right. None of them were there. They weren't stakeholders. I can tell you for a fact that Coal River Mountain Watch was not invited, even though Coal River Mountain Watch works in some of the affected areas. I know from my friends at the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition that they were not invited to the stakeholder meeting. The West Virginia Environmental Council was not invited to the stakeholder meeting. The West Virginia Highlands Conservancy, not invited to the stakeholder meeting. Bless their hearts, even the Sierra Club wasn't invited to the stakeholder meeting. Appalachian Voices wasn't invited to the stakeholder meeting. The AIC campaign, which is actually focused on human health. No, we weren't invited. We're not stakeholders. In point of fact, the chief lobbyist for the West Virginia Environmental Council, a man named Don Garvin, said, "Neither I nor anyone else in the environmental community knew about that meeting. You telling me about it is the first I've heard about that meeting," you being Ken Ward in this case. Isn't that charming? Let's see. And they also sent it around by email. Yes, email. So that law industry lawyers, and by industry, I mean the coal industry, the chemical industry, the oil and gas industry, you know, stakeholders, could comment by email on the new statute. Peter Markham is general counsel for Governor Earl Ray. And he said that lawyers for the governor's administration and a lot of folks from the DEP wrote that bill. Well, of course they did. Of course they did. Because, I mean, why would people in the so-called environmental movement, I mean, why would they think they needed a seat at the table? I mean, that's just a bunch of tree huggers. You see, they had to have the oil and gas and the coal industries involved with the bill because the oil and gas and coal industry, and by oil and gas I also mean a lot of frackers, they have above-ground storage tanks. And Governor Earl Ray wouldn't never know how want to in no way offend his dear, dear friends in the oil and gas and coal industries. No. Dang. So you get the idea. This is about what is good. You know, when Governor Earl Ray acts, it's about what's good for Governor Earl Ray's friends, not what's good for the hoi polloi people of the state of West Virginia. All them mothers out there belly aching about not being able to make their formula. Get the idea? Oddly enough, a guy named Chris Hamilton, who's vice president of the West Virginia Coal Association, got to speak to the legislature about this bill. Nothing from the environmentalists. So, you know, who knows? Marty pointing out, I wouldn't eat any fish or animals from anywhere near the rivers the poison's poisoned. You may have the cart out in front of the horse a little bit, Marty. Start with the water. There's a whole bunch of people in the 9 affected counties who are not, will not, ain't gonna, can't make them drink the water. But the problem, as I have repeatedly noted, and I think we talked about it at some length on Friday on the front porch this past, is that nobody's really talking about stuff that really gets down to the nuts and bolts of this, and that is, what if the entire system has been compromised? Who was it last night that said this may have a sort of Fukushima quality to it? Because it kind of does, doesn't it? In a big way. So we're still waiting. And I guess we'll be waiting for a while. I mean, and I reiterate, I am in an adjacent county. I am not in the affected area. I just happen to have been paying attention to this stuff for rather a long time. And to the extent I've been paying attention to it for rather a long time, it's kind of par for the course when you get right down to it. This is how West Virginia operates. And I'd like to direct your attention, and you can find this posted over at headonradionetwork.com with the nifty new posting system that John Fox put into place. A Guardian piece, an essay, op-ed, if you will, by our old good friend Jeff Biggers. Some of you have already seen this article, but I direct your attention back to it because of one particular aspect to the article. The article title, "If We Don't Put People Before Profits, Spills Like West Virginia Are Our Future." And it's true. It is simply true. But Jeff links in the second paragraph of the piece to an article from the Associated Press by Dina Capiello and Seth Borenstein. West Virginia spill, latest case of coal tainting U.S. waters. The article is worth the read all by itself. And as Jeff Biggers notes, it contains the following. A review of federal environmental enforcement records. You know, that's that dreaded EPA, right? Job killer EPA.
You know, somehow I'd rather have the EPA kill jobs than have the coal industry kill people, but I'm funny that way. Who knows? A report of federal environmental enforcement records shows that nearly three-quarters, that would be 75%, of 1,727 coal mines listed haven't been inspected in the past 5 years to see if they are obeying water pollution laws. Also, 13% of the fossil fuel-fired power plants are not complying with the Clean Water Act. More on that in a minute. Let's do some quick math. Let's see. It's 14 minus... Yep. Oh, how about that? 75% of coal mines haven't been inspected to see if they're in compliance with water pollution laws since President Not Sure took office. I mean, nobody loves talking about the vile, hateful, toxic, poisonous, rotten, did I mention vile, conduct of the Dim Leader administration that lasted the terrifying period of January 2001 to January 2009. Nobody likes to point out those failings more than I. But there's an extent to which we can't hang this on him because he weren't president. New. Nope. So there, just to sort of concrete it up real good in our mind's eye, there are 1,727 coal mines, and none of those coal mines, according to this AP report, have been inspected since 2009 to see whether or not they're fouling the waters of the area in which they operate. And coal mines being coal mines, you can almost guarantee that they are. Yeah. Figure it out. So this was an above-ground storage tank that leaked in Charleston. But meanwhile, elsewhere in Appalachia and other parts of the country, like southern Illinois or perhaps the Powder River Basin of Wyoming, there are coal operations that may very well be poisoning the daylights out of the water, but, well, who knows? Because, and remember, all of these mines have gone uninspected during a time period in which the industry itself has screamed that Obama's got a war on coal. Well, if that's an EPA war on coal, it's being fought without any effing bullets or guns or rocks or even like pointy sticks or threatening gestures. Yeah. So, well, it ain't over out here. Ken Ward also noted today that same EPA that has not even used so much as a threatening gesture toward the coal industry, 75% of coal mines not having been inspected for water pollution in 5 years. The EPA and the CDC have pulled together what's being referred to as a multi-agency team to come down to West by God to try to figure out just what the heck continues to be going on here. Okay. You know the goddess of irony does not take days off, right? This paragraph. Try to constrain your laughter. Officials from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Centers for Disease Control will be in Charleston on Wednesday at the request of Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. Now, why would Earl Ray do that? Because Earl Ray is looking for somewhere to dump some excess baggage, that baggage being guilt. Not the moral kind that keeps you awake at night, mind you, but the actionable kind that makes people surround state houses, you know, if we lived in a functioning self-government, and demand that the occupant thereof immediately quit the premises and go and live somewhere in peace, for God's sakes. Go let us sit on the ground and talk. Right. So the CDC and the EPA are going to come down here so Earl Ray can scapegoat him real good. The CDC, having been kind of busted earlier for ceasing to request information about hospital admissions, nothing to see here. These are not the poisoned hillbillies you were looking for. Nothing to see here. The toxins are strong with those ones. The CDC is going to be trying to follow up with people who went to the hospital. Does one expect much in the way of resolution out of this? No. The CDC indicated, according to Ken Ward, that in addition to meeting with state officials, there has been discussion of some sort of public or media event. Also, this way down in the article. Also unclear, though, is whether the new EPA-CDC visit will push state officials to do what they've so far been unwilling to do, begin testing of at least some sort of sample of home plumbing systems to determine if methyl cyclohexane methanol remains inside pipes and water tanks. Mm-hmm. Because they've only been testing at the water treatment plant. And they've tested some schools. We talked about that on Friday. And they've tested some fire hydrants. Meanwhile, University of South Alabama researcher Andrew Welton has been begging for testing to be done inside residences. Yeah. Because there's really no concrete answer as to whether or not this stuff had penetrative power to become embedded in the physical structure of plumbing lines and water heaters and washing machines and shower fixtures and kitchen sinks. And you get the idea. Now, what I'm afraid of is that this comes with a preconceived answer. Nope, sure couldn't possibly, no way. Because that's the only way to keep from having to say, you know what, this whole thing needs to be just torn out and redone. Because then you get into some Berlin airlift sort of logistics where there's just a steady stream, no pun intended, of water being delivered into these affected counties, and the spotlight doesn't go off the fact that this place is one of the most poisoned places on, well, at least in the country. At least in the country. And that it has been allowed to be such for a very, very, very long time. So you get some idea that the, well, it's not going away. And by the way, not that it matters anything to have such a thing for me, but my personal thanks go out to Charlie Pierce over at the Esquire Politics blog for continuing to report on this story. And most particularly the fact that he used the word poisoned when he described what happened to the water. Because poisoned is what happened to the water.
It's not contamination. It's not a spill.
Poison. You know, the stuff that Dante reserved the next lowest level of hell. You know, poisoners. So, you know, yeah, thanks. Meanwhile, you know, I said in that article, it referenced the fact that uh, 13% of the fossil fuel-fired power plants are not complying with the Clean Water Act. If you want a broad definition of not complying with the Clean Water Act, then let's travel down to Eden, North Carolina, because things like this happen in Eden, North Carolina, because the only deity is the goddess of irony, and she's always on the job. Eden, North Carolina. See Garden of. The Garden of Eden is described in Genesis itself as paradise, a land of perfect contentment, bliss, joy, utter and complete happiness, except for the little ticking time bomb that the all-loving Creator put in the middle of the garden and said, "See that tree over there? Yeah, don't eat from it." My goodness me. Oh, mercy. Mercy, the fruit on it is mighty tasty. But don't you eat from it. Because then that's going to booger up everything if you eat from that tree. Now, I'm all powerful, and I did not have to put that there, and I'm not sitting here telling you not to eat from it just because I enjoy messing with people. But don't eat from it. Of course they're going to eat from it. Jeez, me, damn it. But the one thing Eden didn't have in it, to the best of our knowledge, were ponds full of toxic coal ash. Now, coal ash is what you get when you burn coal for electricity. And, you know, other applications, but primarily in this country for electricity. And because coal is the filthiest of all fossil fuels to burn, and because it puts out toxins that just won't quit. I mean, pumps just poison into the air in the form, you know, ultrafines, microfines, PM10, PM2.5, and there's no PM less than, no, but the ultrafines are there too. And all of these things are poisonous. Well, in its infinite wisdom, it was declared under the Clean Water Act, or the Clean Air Act, rather, that the coal-fired power plants should install devices that would capture and trap these poisons so that the stuff that was causing various and sundry nasty outcomes downwind of these power plants would stop. You remember back when the right-wingers used to deny the existence of acid rain, too? Yeah, that, right, because all the sulfur and stuff goes up, it mixes with water, and it becomes, hup, son of a bitch, sulfuric acid, and falls back to Earth, where it was killing a lot of stuff. Acid rain. Well, anyhow, so when you put these scrubbers on, and you get this coal ash, it's not just any coal ash, this is, as the good book would say, this coal ash is pressed down and shaken together. If there's arsenic in regular coal ash, there's oodles of arsenic in post-scrubber coal ash, mercury, all kinds of nasty crap. And they really don't know what to do with it after the process is over with. So they just stockpile it in ponds, kind of make a sort of a gooey sludge out of it so it won't just blow away in the wind. You might recall it was at Kingston, Tennessee a few years back when a coal ash dam broke. We talked about it at length. Our good friend John Woffen came on to talk about it. I bet you John Woffen's on his way to Eden right now. Well, it turned out that what is being described as an unknown amount of coal ash got dumped into the Dan River when a pipe under a coal ash pond broke in Eden. Now, it broke Sunday afternoon. And when we're talking about they don't know how much got into the river, bear in mind that the pond itself is about 27 acres big. But the dam was okay. The dam didn't break like it did with the Kingston coal ash disaster. Duke Energy said, well, no downstream water supplies have been affected. And Danville, Virginia officials said, well, the spill didn't affect the quality of our water supply. All water leaving our treatment facility has met public health standards. We do not anticipate any problems going forward in treating the water we draw from the Dan River. I bet you don't. By the way, this is Tuesday, the fourth day of February. The spill happened Sunday. Duke Energy waited a day to tell anybody. You know, kind of like the way Freedom Industries wasn't going to tell anybody until the smell got so bad that the DEP went, and they said, no, you really do. You have to file a report. You have to say, hey, we dumped a bunch of poison in the river. Oh, do we really? Yeah, you do. Don't worry. We'll go easy on you. Bankruptcy judge will probably let the boss bankrupt the company. You guys will evade any responsibility. No charges will be filed. Nobody's going to go to jail. Because, you know, y'all are good people. You're good church people. And meanwhile, Duke Energy has said, we don't know how much got into the Dan River. But we'll let people know quick as we're done with our calculations. Got some serious ciphering to be doing. Yeah, let's see. Coal ash, arsenic, mercury, lead, and 12 other members of the toxic heavy metals portion of the periodic table of the elements. Mm-hmm. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? So, just another day. Just another day. By the way, meanwhile, out in the Gulf of Mexico, because why not? I mean, they're doing the best job they know how to do, okay? Sometimes things just go wrong. Back last Thursday, a well out in the Gulf, on a platform in the Gulf of Mexico, started blasting methane gas into the air, and they couldn't get it under control all the way to Friday morning. Now, these well-meaning job creators, wait a minute, job creators come from Rowan Companies PLC. The rig's name is Louisiana. And the goddess of irony had nothing to do with that at all, I'm sure. The Rowan Companies PLC, their workers were on the rig, but the rig is operated by Enven Energy Ventures. Here's the fun part. I love this line. Although gas, water, and sand are still flowing from the well, Enven said no pollution has occurred in the Gulf. Deanna Castillo, speaking to the Associated Press, said, there has been no environmental impact. You see, when Enven Energy thinks about environmental impact, they only think in terms of stuff people can see. Air? F the air. We're just pumping a blue million tons of methane into it, and maybe the whole sky might catch fire, but yeah, probably not. Boyle's gas laws come in handy sometimes. Methane, by the way, is a big deal as far as climate change is concerned. It's a big deal as far as greenhouse gas is concerned. there are certain other planets in our solar system that have high methane content in their atmospheres, and they are very, very warm planets. Now I'm thinking of Venus. Doesn't Venus have a lot of methane in its atmosphere? Yeah. So, gee, I don't know. Did they ever get it? Did they ever get it under control? Does America care, or would America rather just go and see what that precious, precocious honey boo boo child's been up to? Huh? So, just as the old saying goes, watch this space. Right? Yeah. 19 minutes before the hour, this is Titanic Tuesday, and remember, Titanic Tuesday is named in dishonor of the right-wing 932nd tier talker from America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley. I think it's the fifth, I don't know. But he declared one day to one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freak listeners who wanted to know why there were seashell fossils in the rock strata of West Virginia mountains, said it was a function of the movement of the Titanic plates. And thus it seemed, when Jim told that story, it seemed more than appropriate that we name a day after the Titanic intellects of America's right wing. And having moved away just a little bit from this story, the ongoing story of the disaster in West Virginia, the now blossoming story of the potential disaster in Eden, it would be unfair if we didn't give something resembling equal time to the other geniuses. And man, oh man, oh man. We got a Lulu. Now, you might recall Larry Pratt is the head of an outfit that calls itself Gun Owners of America. Larry Pratt, for instance, thinks that Wayne LaPierre over at the National Republican Rifle Association is a wine-slurping, brie-eating, sissified French surrender monkey liberal. I mean, that tells you how far to the right Larry Pratt is. And for some reason or another, because of the free market, I guess, somebody sold Larry Pratt a microphone and some broadcasting equipment. And he's got himself a radio show where he tells everybody all the good and glorious news of Second Amendment remedies and freedom for gun owners in America. Wolverines! Here we go. This particular conversation comes to us from our dear friends at Right Wing Watch. And it's a conversation between gun owner, director, Lurie Pratt and Selwyn Duke, who laughably writes, or who writes for the laughably named periodical The American Thinker. Mr. Orwell. Mr. Orwell to the fire escape. Mr. Orwell to the fire escape. But they, well, they're worried about America because they're good God-fearing, Bible-believing Americans. And they're thinking America is in for hard, hard times. And they got to talking about it over there on the Larry Pratt Has a Microphone show.
There's no doubt about it. He's no friend of the military, and he knows it's no friend of his, and no doubt he'd love to transform it.
He being that one in their White House, right?
And I'm not saying there's anything nefarious going on here for sure, but it's just something that has to occur to you, because once again, if you were that kind of a leader and you wanted to have the military on your side for sure, how would you do it? Well, you would do it by implementing the exact same policies that Barack Obama has been implementing.
Are we okay so far? No, I'm not either. But you see how this guy operates? Now, I'm not saying this is real, and I'm not saying it's factual, but I am saying that, oh, wait. And I'm also not saying that I'm hallucinating my brains out and the walls are breathing and the skies have turned all paisley, but I'm saying... I'm not saying there's anything nefarious going on here for sure. It's just might be nefarious. Because you know how it is with them Kenyan Muslim anti-colonialist socialists with a deep-seated hatred of white people. You know what? That 24-second clip would be enough crazy for an entire segment. But no, there's more.
And in case he doesn't have time to completely change the military, he's, I would say, probably been very faithful about keeping his word on building up a civilian defense force, not for defending the country, but defending the president.
New Black Panthers! New Black Panthers! New Black Panthers! Won't anybody listen? The flag is falling. Do you know where they got that civilian defense force idea from? These pasty-faced, doughy people were so terrified of a video several years ago of, like, 8th and 9th and 10th grade young African-American males who made a video about how they dreamed of becoming doctors and scientists and architects, but they did it while wearing, like, scary clothing if black people wear them. Now, if white people wear those clothing... they're just going out, you know, I mean, we're just going out in the woods. I mean, that's what camouflage is for, right? Yeah. Oh, do go on, Larry Pratt. Do go on.
And that's a significant difference when you are hired on to essentially take an oath to the president, not to the Constitution.
Right, right.
Yeah, right, 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 right. I mean, that's your Praetorian cohort there. I mean, that's, you know, they're just loyal to Caesar and they ain't loyal to Rome and or the Empire or nothing. Right, 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 right. I mean, it would be a substantial difference if there was a cadre of civilian defense forces that were loyal only to President Barack Hussein Obama. I mean, that'd be a big deal, wouldn't it? Yeah, it'd be a big deal if it was happening inside anybody's brain but Larry Pratt's. Again, pretty loopy stuff. Still haven't gotten to the fun part.
Well, you know, it's really very dangerous what's going on here because more and more we're developing an imperial presidency. He seems like a misanthrope, too. You know, another one of his former aides near...
Misanthrope? Does he know what the word means? Misanthrope? Wasn't the... Was it Caliban? In Shakespeare's The Tempest, who was a misanthrope? Anthropon, or something like that, being a Greek word for human, hence anthropology. Human words. And to be a misanthrope is to be a not quite human. Really? No, this guy just said it. Barack Obama is not quite fully human. Gee, where have we heard that stuff before?
Tandon said in an interview that Barack Obama doesn't like people. Quote, that's exactly what she said. She said it's amazing that he's in politics because he doesn't like people. And let me tell you something.
Wait. Oh. Here comes some more. Did I mention you might want to get the duct tape and the tennis balls out? Or ball? I mean, if you chew through the first one. Did I mention that? Huh? You might want to. I mean, you're probably already wanting it, but we got a rock solid minute more of this craziness left, and you're gonna definitely need it. In 3, 2, 1.
Thing, Larry, when you have a leader who doesn't like people, that's very dangerous, because you know what kinds of leaders didn't like people?
I bet I know. I bet you know. Do we all know? We know what kind of leaders didn't like people. I mean, he's not going to say George Washington, is he? No, not hardly.
People like Joseph Stalin.
Bingo!
People like Ivan the Terrible.
Now, he's a newbie to the list, but I always understood that Ivan the Terrible became Ivan the Terrible because he killed his own heir one day in a fit of rage. And they don't like people. They don't like other people. But, you know, I mean, we've got a Stalin. I got a Stalin going once. Stalin going twice, I got a Stalin. Who give me Ivan the Terrible? I got Ivan, okay. Ivan the Terrible in the back room. Got an Ivan the Terrible going once, Ivan the Terrible. Who'll give me a Hitler?
Well, there is one way he likes people, when they adore him.
Well, he wants their adulation. Yeah, I don't know that he likes them. I think he just wants their adulation.
Right.
And it's funny. I mean, I know that they say you Godwin yourself when you mention the Nazis or Hitler, but I'm reminded of Hitler here.
Bingo! We have a winner! Barack Obama reminds Selwyn Duke, American thinker, of Hitler. Yeah, it's probably the little Charlie Chaplin mustache that Barack Obama wears, or maybe the snappy khaki jodhpurs and up to the knee boots and red armbands. Oh wait, no. Wow, it's amazing. You can remind somebody of being of Hitler just by having dark skin like Hitler didn't. Precious. Okay, so we've got misanthrope. We've got the threatened plot to have an entire cadre army of people who will take over America in the name of Barack Obama. I mean, this is a wingnut smorgasbord. But we ain't done.
Yeah, he wanted the adoration of the German people, but in the end, when everything was going downhill and he saw that the walls were tumbling down and he was in his bunker, what did he say? Well, I'm paraphrasing, but in effect, he...
Okay, so what did he say? Well, I'm not going to say what he said. I'm just going to say what I think he said inside the thin gray settlings that slush between my ears, around my lizard, around my amygdala, and pass for a higher functioning human brain. I'm just going to say what that thinks.
He said that if the German people cannot pull this off, then they're not good enough to survive. They deserve to perish. That was his attitude.
And you know, didn't Barack Obama say that in his State of the Union address? No, I didn't think so either.
That's pretty stunning, and I think folks are more and more coming to realize that the man who's been elected twice as our president isn't what a lot of them thought he was.
Nope, not at all.
There's no doubt about it. He's no friend of the military, and he knows it's no friend of his, and no doubt he's...
Holy mackerel. But so now that we understand that he's not a friend of the military, he wants a civilian defense force, he's just like Hitler, or Ivan the Terrible, or Stalin. Interesting how one can be just like Stalin and just like Hitler when those two people despised each other, but that's his creepy magic. But we have to understand what it is that motivates him and motivates the people who support the Kenyan Muslim usurper dictator with a deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies. Why are they like they are?
Some of the best Catholic priests I've seen in this country are from Africa. Intelligent men with PhDs Not that a PhD means much, because you know what they say that stands for nowadays very often.
So first of all, Selwyn Duke is fascinated that somewhere in Africa they give out PhDs to Africans. Son of a gun.
But generally, the African from Africa.
Okay, we're talking about the African from Africa, the one. There's one the African from, yes.
Is a
much, because you know what they say that stands for nowadays very often.
And
but
generally, the African from Africa is a very pro-American person.
Really? I just wonder which African that is. By the way, this was all around a discussion of the passing of Nelson Mandela, in case you were wondering.
A very happy person. I know several, and they just always...
Oh, they're happy! Happy! They're happy. Happy Africans. As declared by Larry Pratt, shiny, white privilege, gun owners of America, Larry Pratt.
Happy person. I know several, and they just always happy.
You'll notice he knows several of the African from Africa.
With a joke, a pleasant smile on their face, and they clearly don't identify with the surliness that's all too frequently the attitude of their fellow African Americans here.
Y'all got that? Surliness. That's the problem. That's the problem. That's what it is. You know, Barack Hussein Obama just floats along on tides of surly African Americanness. Surly. You know, sometimes I wish I ran a speakers bureau. Because I would love to book Tracy on Larry Pratt's Gun Owners of America show. Because I can hear it already, can't you? Yeah. Yeah, Tracy'd show up with all that nobility done gone, fresh out. And yeah. We talked about that. No, really. This guy, Larry Pratt, who knows several happy, joke-cracking Africans, feels more than competent to pass upon the overarching surliness of dark-skinned Americans. I mean, that's some chutzpah, right? I mean, that's some big brass ones. Do tell us more, Larry.
So, face on their face, and they clearly don't identify with the surliness that's all too frequently the attitude of their fellow African Americans here. So, it's a... And they're very conservative politically. Like the country of Ghana, it's still illegal to commit an abortion. It's illegal to be homosexual. Very conservative social laws and very free market oriented as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Now, we do have to place this in perspective, because you'll also hear, and this is true as well, that black immigrants, or I should say African immigrants, in England, for instance, do better economically and educationally than native Englishmen do nowadays. And here they're a high-performing group as well, but the perspective needed is you have to remember something. What kinds of Africans could actually get here? Well, unlike with Mexico, we don't share a border with Africa, so it's not the case that just any poor African can wander into our country. Mm-hmm. The fact is that...
Them poor wandering Africans... But wait, didn't Louis Gohmert say that they were coming over the Mexican? Oh, golly.
get here. You've got to take an airplane. So you have to have some means. You have to have some wherewithal. So the Africans who come here in the first place, I would say, in general, tend to be of a better stripe. They tend to be educated.
No, he didn't. The better stripe? Really? Stripe? They've been whipped sufficiently to make them compliant? Really? Stripe? Hoo-wee! Irish Dave asking, inquiring mimes want to know, do them happy Africans sing them uplifting spirituals in, like, you know, Latin, or do they use the one true language, English? At least they're not singing in Reformed Egyptian yet, Dave. God almighty. We're just getting started. Stripes. We were at stripes.
Educated. They tend to maybe be a little more upper class than a lot of the Africans who can't get here.
It's the way we used to run our immigration system altogether.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter where you came from.
Exactly, exactly. So, yeah.
But, these are folks that really stand apart, and hopefully they can approach some of their fellow blacks and say, hey, buddy, you got this all wrong. Let me explain to you the way the world really works.
Okay, you got that? So everybody of color in the United States, you now have the obligation to adopt a happy African who will tell you how the world really works and that you've got it wrong and you've got to stop being so damn surly. You need to always have a smile on your face for old Mars. Jumping. And, you know, this wouldn't be half as funny as it is, even though it's pretty much tragic, too. This wouldn't be half as... If there was any possibility that either of these cats are self-aware enough to realize what utter, absolute, manifest, thorough jackasses they are. Did you notice not once in that entire diatribe did any country in... Well, no, I'm sorry, they did. He mentioned Ghana. He mentioned Ghana positively because... Ghana wants to make sure that it controls what happens inside women's bodies, and they won't let they won't let the gays live outside. Right, and that's a good thing with these guys. So, Ghana and Africa are apparently interchangeable. All of Africa is Ghana, and Ghana is all of Africa. Yeah, see, Asa gets it. Free market like Somalia or the Democratic Republic of Congo, Bob? Yeah, I know. You could not pay to have this stuff made up. Just wow. So, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, Jim. How are you?
Okay. I never thought that I would hear President Obama compared with Adolf Hitler.
Oh, they've been doing it for 5 or 6 years now, Jim. What are you talking about?
Well, I guess I've been that cloistered, but you know, as far as in my mind, I could not imagine them comparing our president to the Fuhrer, who at the 1936 Olympic Games refused to shake hands with Jesse Owens and therefore didn't shake hands with any medal recipient at the 11th Berlin Olympiad.
But see, they're not just happy comparing him to Hitler, Jim. He is Hitler, Pol Pot, Stalin, now Ivan the Terrible, and anybody, all rolled into one.
Well, hell, at least Ivan the Terrible may have had an excuse, because when his body was exhumed before the war, he had enough mercury in his carcass to probably, I would say, fill a half dozen or two dozen thermometers.
Not part of the embalming process?
No. I mean, the guy was just loaded with mercury. I mean, you know, it was given to him as a poison. They knew that. He had plenty of mercury in there. Arsenic, too. I mean, there was enough stuff in him to, or his remains to, well, to have done a lot of harm to a lot of people had they ingested them or whatever. But nonetheless, you know, Ivan just was kind of nuts, because I think he had a pretty bad childhood, and nonetheless...
He did beat his son to death, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. And even when he was a boy, I understand that he would enjoy throwing small animals off the parapets to see them die.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you of back when George Bush was a little boy and he'd stuff M-80s up frogs' butts and light them.
Something like that, exactly. I mean, but he was a twisted soul. Well, I guess he was okay until he lost his wife, Anastasia. And that's when things really began to go downhill, until when the poison finally took hold and he was playing chess with Boris Godunov and crapped out.
Wow.
And that's what happened, according to Mussorgsky, the opera composer, who did a very good opera about Ivan and his chess-playing friend Boris Godunov, by the same name, Boris Godunov. It's a wonderful opera. It's got great, great voices in it, I must admit. But nonetheless, you know, it's really incredible to hear what you just read.
Well, I'm reminded, Jim, that they also compare him to Mao.
Mao. Well, if you want to read the book that I just recommended a couple of weeks ago called Red Azalea, mm-hmm. Mao's Cultural Revolution, I don't think that that's going to hold any water. Because the author of this book compared... You know, or not even compared or contrasted, but simply just told how horrible that Cultural Revolution was, and how people were just completely debunked, and God only knows how many people disappeared, including some of Mao's very close associates. What was the name, Lin Piao, the one who died in a mysterious plane crash over Russia or something like that? I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong, but I think it was Lin Piao. I mean, they used to say before the Cultural Revolution, there is one God but Mao, and Lin Piao is his prophet. But that came to a rather bad end. I think it was Lin Piao. But it's just incredible. I just want to ask you a question. I watch this program, and I normally don't watch it because the guy can be a real turkey, called The Decision Makers on CBS.
Okay.
And I can't even remember his name, but I always watch it because I always enjoy CBS Sunday Morning with Charles Osgood. And I will catch parts of this program when I flip over. But even he excoriated this particular person. It was a lady named Letitia. I can't remember her last name. Supposedly a physician who, when asked, you know, about this source of water contamination, she replied that she could not give out the sources of her information that said that the water was acceptable. And he told her, and I don't like this guy at all, but I had to agree with him this time. He said, for you to have said to me what you said this morning on this program, that you cannot give me the names of the people who are supporting your decisions and your opinions, if you cannot make them public, then this is totally unconscionable. And she said, I'll have to get back to them and ask them if I can give them their names.
Oh, for pity's sake.
And the only other guest he had on that program, well, he had the mayor of Charleston who just sat there and, you know, he didn't have a whole lot to say. But he did have Dr. Gupta. And he...
Who is trying his best to do a decent job, I think.
Exactly. And that's what the guy said. He said, you're an honorable man and I respect
you. Oh, are you talking about that thing? Oh, okay. Yeah, the local program, Bray Carey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't remember his name. Sorry.
That's okay.
Nonetheless, even he realized that this woman, Letitia, whatever.
Tierney, I believe.
Right, Dr. Tierney. I think she's a physician with public health in Charleston. And, of course, that's the state physician. And, of course, Dr. Gupta, I think, is with the local Charleston Public Health Department, right?
Yeah, he's the head of the Kanawha County Health Department.
Okay, she's state, he's county. But, nonetheless, the only guest that he really praised on that program for his honesty and his veracity and as being an honorable man. And for this guy, Brett Carey, or whatever his name is, to praise somebody like Dr. Gupta as opposed to, you know, normally he can be pretty obnoxious with a lot of people, but even he was right at this time.
Yeah, and see, that's what this happening in the Kanawha Valley has done, Jim, because, you know, the Kanawha Valley is the seat of power, money, and influence in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one thing for the hacks and flacks to say that, oh, hell, there ain't nothing. There ain't nobody getting poisoned down there in the mountaintop removal areas. Hell no. That's just big old construction site. And, I mean, they say that.
Well,
but the worm turned, and it turned toward Charleston.
Well, yeah, it did. And, of course, this particular lady apparently owes her appointment to the governor, and she was going to cover herself by saying, yes, I drank the water, and even was somewhat hesitant to say that. I mean, you can look at somebody when they're telling you the truth and when they're telling you a lie. At least I can.
Oh,
at least I hope I haven't lost that
bill. Yeah, pun not entirely intended, but... from the first time I saw the woman quoted, she was carrying water for Earl Ray. Because the minute that questions were posed about the safety of the water, she said, well, heavens no. You know, like that idiot from Tennessee. Goodness.
But listen, this Brett Carey guy had her nailed. I mean, he just said that right to her face. He said, this is a totally unconscionable. And all the woman could do was to sweep her right hand over this curtain of hair that kept falling in her eyes. I mean, I guess she's trying to look like Greta Garbo. I don't know what the hell, but she sure as hell didn't carry that off.
I don't know, but I bet she damn sure wanted to be alone.
I'm telling you, you got it. She wanted to get off that thing with him because he was nailing her butt right to the wall. And I thought it was pretty interesting. And it's like you're saying, there's no guarantee about this water and its ability for people to use it, except for washing cars or flushing. I wouldn't wash my car with it.
Oh, hell no.
But nonetheless,
they said at one point it could be used to put out fires. I think that deserved a second thought.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. It's like that. And then they went into, with Dr. Gupta, several things about the leakages and that tank, and they were like from an inch to a three-quarters of an inch in diameter and under tremendous pressure and were just pouring out, oh, lots of poison into the water. It was really bad.
Oh, yeah. And then, last week, the second spill when they breached a pipeline that nobody knew was there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that too. And they had another guy out there who was like, I think, the district attorney or the not district attorney, but he was like the federal district attorney for southwestern West Virginia. Even he was at a loss to determine.
Oh, you mean Goodwin?
I believe so. I mean, like I say, I don't watch that program, and, you know, I thought it was going to be another source of a lot of right-wing bull stuff. And but nonetheless, I just didn't catch the name.
Well, I mean, just let it roll around in your head for a minute, Jim. That they have not to this day tested even one sample of water coming from someone's tap in their kitchen.
Well, the thing with her and the host of that show was he asked her where the samples of water were kept, and she wouldn't answer it and kept referring to the National Guard.
Because the National Guard was tasked with gathering the samples. And
right, and she would not go beyond that. Apparently, somebody had her running real scared. And well, the best thing she should have done that morning was to have called that Brett Carey and said, I have the flu and I can't come in. Because she certainly did not acquit herself very well on that program. I mean, he made her out to be a complete liar. And a person without...
Well, I mean, look at Earl Ray himself. They refer now to the West Virginia Coal Association as stakeholders when they're putting together a bill to regulate above ground tanks that have poison in them that can poison the water supply of 300,000 people. And the stakeholders are the West Virginia Coal Association, the West Virginia Oil and Gas Association, and the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. Good God Almighty, Jim.
Well, You've mentioned the word stakeholder, and that's exactly the type of person in whom they place any type of care or confidence or concern. Because they sure as hell don't have a whole lot, in my opinion, for the consumers and the people who will be hurt. And even Dr. Gupta said that there should be at least a 10 or 20 year study on the effects of what happened last month.
Well, there needs to be, there needs to be ongoing medical monitoring for every human being who came in contact with that stuff.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what he said, too. He really did.
And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to just beat a dead horse or anything, but...
Well, I don't blame you.
Until somebody, Jim, can say that it is 100% safe to drink this stuff. I mean, I'm, you know, like I said before, I'm one county away. And I would, if I were in that situation, I would not rest until I'd replumbed the entire house. But the thing is, what's the point in replumbing the entire house if there's a possibility that every water main in the system is compromised?
Well, that would be totally counterproductive.
So
the best thing you could do is to cut yourself off from the water supply and go back to your well, if that would be possible. But apparently, from what you said previously, your well is not what it used to be. So you're really caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, aren't you?
Yeah, and that's why I'm describing what needs to be happening in terms of a Berlin airlift.
Well, and ironically, during this program, on the desk for each guest were glasses of water. Now, I've never seen that before, not that I watched Brett Carey, but like I say, I just catch the tail end of the show when I'm waiting on CBS Sunday morning with Charles Osgood. And, of course, that Sunday, we had a lot to do with a lot of different things. Interesting program. It always is. It's a good program. I like it. CBS Sunday morning, not the decision makers, because I really can't handle what Mr. Carey has to say a lot of times. I mean, I don't know.
Well, for the most part, he's a shill for the industry.
Yeah, he is.
And he is a media gatekeeper of the first order, because the reason he does that show and the reason that it is on the channel that you found it on, Jim, is because his conglomerate owns several different TV stations in several different markets in West Virginia.
Right.
And of course he's a friend of coal. He will hear no ill spoken of the industry, and I'll bet you not. I bet the word coal wasn't even spoken during that interview, was it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
To what extent?
They were describing what the chemical was used for.
Hmm.
Clean coal, stuff like that.
Right.
And how basically the upshot of the program was an accusation of total irresponsibility of Freedom Industries and, you know, their confederates. At least that was was my opinion of it. I was just really surprised and shocked because normally when I, you know, cut him in, I flip over to something else until CBS Sunday Morning comes on. But I listened to that. And he had a pretty good program that day. I mean, he had a number of people there. He had like four or five guests, and including the district attorney, the mayor, this public health doctor, this lady, Leticia, whatever her name is, and then Dr. Gupta. And for once, it was pretty interesting. And really kind of devastating, too, actually.
Well, it is devastating. It is exactly that.
Sunday was an interesting day for TV, was it not?
Oh, it was. It was indeed.
I mean, not even I, who am no real fan of football, I couldn't believe what I saw during the first play of that thing or the first couple of minutes. I said, well, I can tell you how this is going to come out, and I'm no football fan. And good Lord in heaven.
Yeah, when that football blew by his head, it was, oh my goodness, really?
Oops. Oops is when you gargle with Drano. Oh, and they also, Sunday afternoon, and I thought about you too, they had this documentary about Alex Jones.
Oh no, where?
I can't remember the channel, I'm sorry. I was...
Yeah, not that I'm going to go watch it, I mean.
But, I mean, this guy, I could not believe him. I mean, he was just going on, and his followers were going on about 9/11, and then this, that, and the other, and how the Bilderberg Society and the group of small people are going to take over the world. And this.
Haven't they done that already?
Yeah, I guess so. But, I mean, and, of course, they had some shots of Alex riding in the car, and he was just, he's really a very rude person. He's extremely rude, very gruff, and just gets up there and acts like that you are being done a privilege by hearing what he has to say, when I think what he has to say is mostly a bunch of crap.
And, oh, yeah, he's...
I mean, he's a real...
He's orbiting his own planet.
He's a real piece of work, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think he is a couple sandwiches short of a picnic. But it was a good documentary about him and his followers. And they had protests and stuff like that. And his lieutenants were interviewed by people asking exactly why they believed in what he said, this, that, and the other. And these people were so emotional, they couldn't even respond properly. And then there was a shot, I think he shot in New York, and even Geraldo was up there making fun of him, you know, and he was calling Geraldo a media whore.
Well, okay, and even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then, Jim.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I mean, it takes a spine to show you where the truffles are, right? And he has some of those, you know, women who work for Fox whose legs go up to their throat. No offense intended, but that's exactly what they're there for. I mean, you know, titillate people. I mean, you know, they are attractive, but he said, and he was calling them whores too. So I guess, Alex, you know, like I say, it does take a spine to show you where the truffles are, but it was an interesting documentary about him and what he is espousing. And then later on, they had something on about some big mansion or some complex with tunnels and stuff like that that's being built in some part of the Southwest, where's Arkansas or someplace like that? I'm not sure. Don't hold me to it. But anyway, they had a program about that, and it was this huge mansion. I mean, it was bigger than any castle you've ever seen. And it was being built, I guess, to contain certain people, and they were pouring it with a special concrete that had fibers in it called helix, and it was designed to withstand all types of natural and man-made disasters. So, I mean, Sunday afternoon had a lot of good visual pablum on there. I will say that. And as far as the Super Bowl is concerned, after I saw the first play, I went over to see Downton Abbey to see what was going on there.
Oh, you didn't watch Animal Planet and the the Cat Super Bowl? Or
I saw part of that, and I thought, okay, that's fine. But I have enough experience with cats doing similar things in my house, so I said, okay, that's good. Let them score a point or two or whatever. You know, I just wanted exactly what they had to do to those cats to make them do that. But nonetheless, cats are highly intelligent, but they're very intractable about certain things, you know?
Right. They don't, they're not herd animals.
No, they're not going to do anything they don't want to do. And whatever you have to induce them to make them do something, it's got to be pretty good. And they're pretty good arbiters of taste, that's for damn sure. But I saw part of that. But, I mean, after having seen Alex Jones, and then, of course, previously early in the morning, the decision makers, I think I went back to Turner Classic Movies and just, I forgot what I watched, but they usually have pretty good fare on there with a lot of old movies and things like that. And I love old films, and, you know. And speaking of actors and things, I just want to mention, I said we've lost two great people this year. The first was Maximilian Schell, whom I absolutely adored. He was a wonderful actor, an incredible character actor. And the second is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, that was...
Who did, when he did Capote and also did I believe it's called Fabulous, the one with Al Pacino, who was the blind cop, or not blind, but he had a stroke.
Oh, no, you mean Son of a Woman.
No. Son of a Woman was one of the first ones he came into. Actually, he started out with Boogie Nights.
Yeah. That.
And then he did Son of a Woman, and then he did Fabulous, in which he played this drag queen. Who lived in an apartment?
Oh yeah.
But with Al Pacino, whose mission was, Pacino was paying him to teach him how to speak again. And then, of course, when he did Capote, it was just incredible. I thought that Truman Capote had come back
from the dead. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I want to see, because I never got around to seeing it. I want to see Pirate Radio.
Well, I haven't seen that, but these are the couple films that I've seen this guy in, and I'm just so sorry he had that addiction and he had to leave the way he did. But nonetheless, with Maximilian Schell, who, well, I will never forget, and the many...
Didn't he win an Academy Award for Judgment at Nuremberg?
He certainly did, as Herr Roth, the defense attorney for Burt Lancaster. But, I mean, he was just an incredibly gifted actor and could play almost any role. I mean, he played so many different roles throughout his career. And he died, I think, in Innsbruck at the age of 83. And I was just deeply saddened to hear of his passing, because I was much more attached to Maximilian Schell than I had been to Seymour Hoffman, because I guess because of time and stuff like that. I only had a brief time with Seymour Hoffman, but I had a lot of time with Maximilian Schell, who just did a wonderful job playing so many incredible roles. And I just wanted to mention that because it really made me very sad. I mean, Maximilian Schell died, I think, on Saturday, and Seymour Hoffman, they found his body on Sunday morning or late Sunday or whenever. And it's bad when people go like that. I mean, it's bad enough to go anyway, but to go with a syringe in your arm and all the stuff that they found, the accoutrements, which they say are 50 bags of whatever, they don't know what the hell it was. But nonetheless, he was so talented. He did such a wonderful job in playing the part of Capote and then playing a drag queen, teaching a policeman who had a stroke how to speak, and all the troubles that he thought that he went through with people who were trying to intimidate him because of his alleged sexuality as portrayed in the role of the film. It was just incredible.
I need to see Fabulous.
I think you do. I think it would increase your level of visual literacy a couple percent, and I would suggest that you take a look at it. It's good, because he's not going to be making any more movies, that's for sure.
Well, Yeah. For some reason or another, I thought of, well, John Belushi, you know, OD. And later on, I saw another a news story talking about the fact that I guess that one of the new trends in the heroin trade in this country, Jim, is to mix it with a super narcotic called fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
And that people are dying getting hot doses like that because...
Yeah, Theraflu is what they call it.
Yeah.
And there's some other name, too. I mean, that's what happened to Belushi in the...
Belushi was a speedball.
Yeah, well, he basically got a hot dose. It's all a hot dose when you get a speedball, whatever you want to call it. If it kills you, you can call it a hot dose or speedball or whatever, but, I mean, you know, it's just more than the body can stand. But, hey, it's so bad that so many people who have such talent get into that situation in which they are dependent on.
Well, that stuff has destroyed a lot of lives.
Sure has, and, you know.
From the music world, the film world, the art world.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, also the day-to-day working world.
I mean, you go from Jimi Hendrix to Janis Joplin to, you know, so many people who have had problems with it. Richard Pryor, for example, he had some problems with
Billie Holiday.
Oh, I saw that movie yesterday. Lady Sings the Blues. That was the other thing with Diana Ross. If you haven't seen that one, you need to see it.
Oh, I have.
Eleanor Fagan, the little girl from, I think, St. Louis or someplace like that. I know that may have been Josephine Baker, but I'm not sure where Billie Holiday was. I know Josephine Baker came from St. Louis, but Billie Holiday, had a hard time being Eleanor Fagan, and, you know, basically it showed when, in one scene, when she was traveling, it was with Harry James. And accordingly, what I've heard, I can't prove this, it was he who gave her first dose after a hard night's drinking or just a hard night's entertaining of going to the South and getting off a bus just to go to the bathroom and finding a tree with a black man hanging from it. Hence the song that she wrote, Southern Trees Bearing Strange Fruit.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the poor woman, my God, she was... And the only place that would give her a break after her cabaret license was revoked was in P-Town.
Yep.
And she came there a lot. And she never could quite lick it because she had so many things to overcome. But I like Diana Ross. I've always liked her. And she played, the role magnificently. Now, later on, they had Mahogany, which didn't do too well. I think it had her and Billy Dee Williams. And I think Anthony Perkins was in that, too. But that movie never took off. Not the way Lady Sings the Blues did. But if you want to have a good CD with a lot of good songs and stuff like that, Billie Holiday, I think, would appreciate it. I think Diana Ross did a pretty good job in representing her stage presence and her voice and her story. And on that note, Brother Bob, I'm going to leave you where I found you because you've got other people who would like to talk to you.
All right. Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening, and we will talk soon.
Well, you take care, and like I say, be well, and the weather's moderated somewhat.
It's nice not to be frozen solid. But
sure, there's more to come, though. Who knows?
No, but right now, this is just slop.
And one other thing. I'll tell you, Wall Street is really taking a beating, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. To be expected, though.
Exactly. And these people are so surprised that they can't stay above 16,000. And, you know, it's just incredible what their reactions are to it. And I guess they're false reactions because they ask, what else could they say? Because a lot of people are losing money and stuff. But I'll tell you, the economy, I think this is a harbinger of a very severe blow to our economy, as well as to other worldwide economies that are being impacted by it. And, of course, are impacting this particular situation in our country.
Yes, it is.
So it doesn't look too good. I guess by all I can say, I don't mean to be a harbinger of doom or whatever, but we've had a big long ride with it, or they've had a big long ride with it, so it's time for the roller coaster to come down. It always does.
Well, yeah, it does, and the people who are surprised by it, I don't know why they're surprised.
Well, the Federal Reserve's going to have an impact on that, too.
But, I mean, the whole market is so dummied up, Jim, it's not even...
Exactly. I mean, these numbers are so horribly inflated, and it's just artificial. It's almost, I mean, the thing that happened that I did remember from a report from Wall Street, I think it was Sunday also, yesterday, it was the sharpest drop, I think, since 1933, or the sharpest down curve, or whatever they called it. But I know that they referenced the year 1933.
You know, there's not a lot in this world that you want to reference to 1933, is there?
No, but I'm sure more learned people in your audience than I about the stock market can reference that more clearly, but that's what I understood. But they kept referencing 1933, which was a very bad year for a lot of people.
Yeah, in a lot of places. Jim, have yourself a good evening.
Okay, good night, Bob.
Bye now. And let's keep it rolling. Lines open, by the way, 304-658-3333 on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn. Let's see. And thanks to Brian. Brian jumped out there to help us with Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. We now only need 11 folks at $10 apiece to meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge and stay even with the month of February to keep all of this going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
How you doing, Bill?
Well, hanging in. You guys got me going as usual. Alex Jones reminded me of... I used to have a book, A Dictionary of American Slang, which was no book, but it was interesting because things I had never heard before when I was young, you pick up on, you know.
Yeah.
And Alex Jones is a champion Spanish athlete. You know what that is, Bob?
No.
A bullfrog. Yeah, that was that came back to me. That was out of that book, and I still snicker at it when I hear it because it fits so well. It's just the usual. Yeah, that game was a real. What the hell do you think happened on that opening center?
Well, if you watched what he did after he snapped the ball. It looked like he had an assignment to go out and find somebody in the linebacking corps or something because he was long gone. I mean, snap the ball and,
yeah.
I mean, he wasn't just blocking some guy in front of him.
Yeah, it was a pullout job, which they were one of the things in my early youth when I was listening to football coaches and that on the sidelines when they were. Catholic Youth Organization had a couple of leagues, 110 and under, and then over 110, which was heavies. And I dabbled in the lightweight under 110, so you can imagine how old I was. And they, the coaches showing us how to pull out to lead a block around the end, around the corner, And that's what happens. Your brain gets ahead of what your main job is.
Well, I think he's, and pure speculation, I think he just saw something that he didn't necessarily recognize, and because it wasn't like a pull, because like when a guard pulls, he goes behind, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, the guy that snapped the ball went out.
Yeah, there was a name for that, too. I can't remember what it was, but because you know me, Bob, there was books on football that I would read now and then just from the angle of how it was being coached, and the technicalities of it that made your position this, that, and the other thing, and it's been in constant flux. Of course, I like to, and I think I've referred people already to a book written by a Cleveland defensive back in the under the Brown regime that was titled "They Call It a Game," and it was about the injuries that were going on in the 1960s, 50s, late 50s, early 60s. I can't remember the exact time of it, but that's when it was published. Because it's that kind of a game, Bob. That's the only problem that I see is this game is changing so much from, you know.
Well, you know, I read some references to Noam Chomsky talking about how professional sport are conceived and executed and managed the way they are for purposes, and I think he meant sport generally, for purposes of dulling people's minds.
Yeah, it's
and I can get with that a little bit, but and certainly Chomsky is a genius. I wonder a little bit if that's not a counterproductive argument, because there's nothing. Just tune into any sports talk radio station, okay? And what you will hear are people who are passionately well-informed, often, or at least have strongly held opinions about the sport in question and can cite chapter and verse or statistic or seasonal win-loss records, what have you, in order to support the validity of whatever argument is they are attempting to make. That means that by definition they cannot be dullards, doesn't it?
Well, no, they can. I listen to sports talk after the good stuff's off the air, and if I don't want to sit up all night, hearing a repeat of your show at midnight, which I will sometimes do, maybe out of the ego of wanting to hear my own fat.
No, you're air checking. That's not ego. That's air check.
Air check? Yeah, well, yeah, that's for sure. And most people don't realize that until 58 or so, professional football was second to, guess what?
Baseball.
You got it. Baseball was the sport when there was 8 teams in each league, for God's hell. I can still throw the Philadelphia Athletics out. You know, that's how, how the brain works, and talk about the guy who got killed playing ball, Ray Chapman, and it was there's a book written about the Indians that was published in 49, and between 52 and 56, I must have read it 4 times, so I knew that deal, and my dad bought me a book for kids, Bob Feller's Strikeout Story.
You know, there was a book out there a few years ago, I think I picked it up, on a cutout table or something, but it was just a magnificent piece of writing. I'm trying to remember who edited it. For some reason, I think the editor's name was Einstein. Really,
yeah.
And it was just called The Baseball Reader, and it had some of the best baseball writing that had ever been done. Some of the biography, for instance, the biography of Ty Cobb, was in there. The transcript, and this is a real Lulu if you can ever get your hands on it, the transcript of the testimony of Casey Stengel before the congressional panel investigating baseball's status as, it's Sherman Act exemption, it's antitrust status. And the thing was just full of little pieces of magnificence. The classic baseball story, You Could Look It Up, by
Lardner?
No, not Ring Lardner. The guy that wrote Walter Mitty. Help me here. Ohioan.
Was he?
Thurber. James Thurber.
Oh, Thurber. Yes. Thurber was excellent. He wrote a.
Well, that story was particularly good because it presaged. You remember when Bill Houck was it? No, Bill Veeck.
Bill Veeck, yeah. Well,
when Bill Veeck put the midget in the game?
Yeah, that was during when he was running the Indians, wasn't it?
Well, this story James Thurber wrote this story before Bill Veeck ever did that. And I don't know if it was just prophecy or he planted the seed. But the end of that story will absolutely leave you gasping for air, rolling around on the ground. It's so funny.
Well, Thurber was excellent. I should check with the talking books in the library, see if they have anything out there that he did, collection of stuff or whatever. Because they'll fool you once in a while. They have a great collection of the Dashiell Hammett Continental Op Series.
Oh, by the way, I've been wandering off into John D. McDonald lately.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What was his character's name?
Travis McGee.
Did he operate out of Florida? Or was
yep, yep, out of Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm. My memory is not completely gone yet, but...
Well, they're really interesting little portraits of a specific place and time, because he doesn't try to deliberately date the material. He just can't help it. And so I think the first of the Travis McGee novels was published in like 1962. And so there are references in there that just speak to that time. And it's absolutely and he writes, you know, when it comes right down to literature, he writes on a par that's pretty close to Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler.
Yeah, those two are the best. You ever hear of Ross McDonald?
Yes.
Because he made the cover of Newsweek or something in the 60s, because I remember reading it from burning holes in it, reading the article. Because his guy, what the hell was his name? Paul Newman played him in two movies. His character was always based on some child witnessing something very young, and the story grew out of what this child had witnessed. So he had a style to his work, too. The good guys did. Hell, we talked baseball. My mother was born in 08, that is, 19. At age 12, she was going to a place called League Park to watch the Indians play when they won this first, well, one of two series they won in their careers and in a company life. And she said you'd get on a bus going to the ballpark, and who'd be on the bus going to the ballpark? Ball players in uniform carrying a glove on public transportation. Because of the money they didn't make in those days. And there's a great book on the black, only it was titled Only the Ball Was White. And it's a history of the black major leagues long before Jackie Robinson. And Cool Papa Bell and people of that ilk who were just tremendous ball players and never got a shot, really a good shot at the majors because of their skin color. How ridiculous was our society at some point?
Well, if you go back into the deeper history of baseball, you will find that once upon a time, I think it was in the 1890s or early 1900s, the Cincinnati Reds tried to bring in a baseball player from Cuba.
Yep.
And they practically had to give 12 generations of family, and the argument was made, and the story stayed with me, because... the Cincinnati Reds management argued that he was as, and this is a quote, as white as Castile soap.
Yeah, I had heard that expression. Now I.
But it was out of that the overall larger ban, you know, was created.
Yeah. I mean, how ridiculous! Just how. Can you imagine professional ball today? Oh, who runs professional baseball right now? The fellows from Latin America.
Well, sure, because and people like Dave Zirin over at The Nation have done brilliant work exposing the baseball machinery, the absolute industry of baseball in places like, for instance, the Dominican Republic.
Yep.
And I think it was in particular in a discussion, ongoing discussion of the steroid problem in baseball, because in the Dominican Republic, You get steroids by walking in the door and being tall enough to put the money on the counter.
Yeah, they're legal down, or semi down there, semi legal. Yeah. Well, the book on Page that I had, you know, Trujillo, more or less came and strong armed and paid Page to go down and pitch for his team when he was running for office. So that was early in Trujillo's career, of course, when he ran for office. After that, you ran from him. That's how things were done down there. You know, corruption has a way of reaching out and grabbing you by the throat in almost every field that is out there. They say throw football. Paul Brown came to visit. I think I told you the story too many times. He came to visit the Catholic home that I was living in for 4 years. Nice of them. They took an ace student and made a creep out of him. My mother was pushing me like the president's mother pushed him. You know, this is the only way to go forward in this world is to get a damned education. You know.
Yeah. But, well, that used to be a pretty valid strategy.
Well, Brown showed up to visit out there with Graham and Dante Lavelli, Lou Garosa, and more, and a big running back named Bassett. And, of course, the Indians had just blown the World Series in four straight to the New York Giants. You ever see pictures of the catch that Willie Mays made on Vic Wertz?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they pan around the... I hope it was honest, where they panned around the stadium and people were standing up and in disbelief that he had made that catch. But, hell, how many of those guys it could have been... You know, the whole thing is... When these guys let, it's surprising in that American capitalists were so stupid they let racial prejudice get in the way of making money. I'm surprised because they don't seem to put anything else.
Well, that's what happens when ideology trumps good business sense.
Yeah.
And there was a price to be paid. Anybody who's seen the Jackie Robinson biopic knows.
Yeah.
There was a hell of a price to be paid, and it was going to be paid by people in the stands.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that, not that they were going to. What I mean is that, you know, if they stay away, the owner's money, the money didn't get right.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, both Beth and Mark have reminded me that it was. Paul Newman playing in the Lou Archer series, but Beth reminds me when Paul Newman played him, they changed his name to Harper.
Harper, yeah, the character's name was Lou Archer.
Yeah.
In the books.
Yeah. Of course, I remember. Do you remember the Matt Helm movies with Dean Martin?
Yeah. Just vaguely though. I got to a point where in my
maybe there was only one, but it seemed like there was. I'm trying to, and there was another one that was kind of a spoof on Bond that was played by James Coburn.
Yep.
Was that Our Man Flint?
Could have been. Because I've read some of the early Bond, was it Casino Royale, and some of the others in soft cover books. Because in those days, I didn't have a car, so to go to work. When I was a kid, to go to work in the knitting shops, I'd ride the bus. And, of course, the best companion you could have on a bus in my day was a book. Because it also gave you something to hide behind as you did. I was one of these people that observed people and you watched people. But you didn't sit and stare at them. That's ridiculous, you know. You just watched. We had one guy in the neighborhood who was kind of off the mark, and he'd get on the bus talking to himself. And from what I could gather, he didn't like his ex-wife much because he spoke out loud about her a few times. And it used to be kind of a
Mrs.
show.
Katz and her lawyer.
Yeah, oh, God. Yeah, that's the...
I'm sorry, that one stuck, Bill.
Well, that is so old. My dad left me with two books. One was called Showbiz Vaud to Video, and the other was just Show Business. And I learned an awful lot about vaudeville and what it was long before radio. And then our buddy in Colorado, who I feel for, he's the only guy that I felt a little bit for during the Denver game, because we in Cleveland hate Denver, of course, after them taking us to the cleaners and keeping the Browns out of it. Browns have never made the Super Bowl, and who else? I don't know. And yet they dominated the league from 50 to, you know. And actually, they almost made the playoffs in 58. They went into New York, and they lost, so they had to come back and play New York two games in a row, and they lost both of them. And, of course, that was the Allen Amici touchdown game, you know, the overtime game. It's just, and it, you know, here, and the funny part of Bob, it's all tied to money.
Well, sure it is. And the one thing that I have at least heard a little bit more talk about lately is why in the name of all that's holy, is the NFL allowed to operate as a non-profit?
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I mean, and when you begin to take that all together, Bill, and you consider that most of the teams are playing in stadiums that have been built by virtue of diversion of the commons, you know, taxpayer money or tax deferments, you know, all those dodges, then why are there owners? Why are there owners of teams who are individual wealthy people?
Yeah, they really, well, you mentioned Bill Veeck. His father ran the Chicago Cubs when Veeck was a kid, and he actually, in the old style, put the kid to work selling peanuts, you know, through the stands. Yeah. Veeck was quite the showman.
Well, wasn't it Bill Veeck who put, and this was back in the days when they really well and truly sucked for air, wasn't it Bill Veeck who put the White Sox on the field in short pants?
Yep, I believe it was. He was an entrepreneur and a half. Right after World War II, he had Ladies' Day games where they gave away stockings, which in those days, I forget what they were made of, but it wasn't anything like the process today. Was it actual silk they were made of? The so-called nylons, you know, that are now a product of, I think, Dow Chemical originally.
Well, that was the big deal with the during the rationing and everything of the Second World War. Didn't silk stockings pretty much go away because it was all needed for the parachutes?
Yep.
And that led to the discovery of nylon.
Yep.
Which was then knit into stockings, and
In the mid-50s, we were wearing shirts, see-through shirts, made out of nylon like that when I was 11 or 12.
Yeah, and I'm old enough to, up until the mid-70s, they were still pushing those 100% polyester shirts. And I don't think I've ever had a fabric next to my skin that breathed less.
Well,
it was like wearing a sandwich baggie.
I just ordered some skiers underwear with polypropylene.
Oh, that stuff's great.
Because it weighs nothing, and I'm sitting around wearing it for, sitting around the apartment because this place, either I'm getting old and cold, or they don't run the heat the way they should. Who knows? You never know with the profiteering of people today what they will do or will not do to make an extra 2 cents a head, you know. Because it's there, and it makes you sound like a complete paranoid idiot. But IATM, it's all about the money. Keeps coming back.
Yeah, and that goes right alongside Igamfu. I've got mine.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, a note coming in from Mark down in Florida. He says, I wonder if Bill ever heard of my step-grandfather, former union coal miner and president of National League Umpires Union, Al Barlick.
I've heard the name.
Cleveland being an American League city.
Yeah, I was listening to the radio in 57 when Gil McDougall hit a line drive back through the box, as they used to say, back through the pitcher's mound, and I hit Herb Score right in the face. Destroyed his career because he's out in the world.
And it can even be dangerous to go to a baseball game. I used to love to take the kids when they were little. We'd go down to Charleston to watch some minor league ball, and we had a magnificent old tumbled-down wreck of a ballpark called Watt Powell Park. And it had railroad tracks behind it. And from time to time, somebody would park one, and I think it was the deepest outfield in the minors, maybe, at one point. But every now and then, some slugger would park one on a passing coal train, and they would say, he knocked it all the way to Pittsburgh.
Well, there's a story.
Just to wrap up real quick, they had to have a new stadium, so they built this little itsy bitsy, bricks and real throwbacky looking park for the 1A ball club that plays in Charleston now. And we were sitting back behind third base, in the first, you know, the first row up, not the boxes, but after that. And it was Ferg and me and Doodle and Margaret, and I can't remember if Agnes was with us or not. But a right-handed batter got all the way around on an inside pitch. Got all the way around on it and pulled it all the way into the stands where we were sitting, where it went straight into the face of a woman who was watching the game.
Yes, that's happened. Yes.
And, you know, that stadium is described as, you know, an intimate setting for watching baseball, which means that you're right on top of the action. And she was paying attention to the game. I mean, it's not like she was talking to her neighbor. We were all watching. But there was no way to defend against it.
Must have come fast.
Oh, like a bullet. And, you know, just a reminder that, well, balls may leave the playing area.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, you'll get a kick out of this. Irish Dave just sent this along. He said, today's fun fact, nylon was discovered in both New York and London, and hence the name Nylon.
Oh, I'll be darned.
I had no idea.
Well, because they were always, man, the whole, we have a company here now called Brush Development. It was called Brush Beryllium. And do you know anything about beryllium?
It can be very, very toxic.
Yeah. Yeah, they lost a lot of people on that plant over the years. In fact, I'm supposed to have dinner with the guy that I used to go to the Vietnamese place on the west side. We are down here 5 minutes from where I'm living now. There's two Thai restaurants, so I got to, you know, we still have a place to go, so this guy will be over to visit. And he's the guy that took all my recordings and put them, except the last one was actually done originally on CD, but the other two, one was the first one was on 33, and the second on cassette. The low budget blues band presents, you know, I mean, that's just the way it was, Bob. But it keeps coming back, you know, that's what, because I know we talk politically, but so much of what we talk about now, it's all about the money. The whole society is being run that way. And the people that were against Social Security in the 30s, and Halberstam's book on the Korean War, he really goes into depth on the right wing of the day, who, you know, was pro Chiang Kai-shek, and I knew guys, two guys I had met in my life when I was a young man, who were parts of the airlift from India to China. The over-the-hump airlines.
Right.
And they were taking millions of dollars of supplies into Chiang Kai-shek, which was promptly going in his pocket.
And oddly enough, the over-the-hump run figures significantly in the very first of the Travis McGee novels.
Oh, darn.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite generals to come out of World War II was a book that the woman who wrote Guns of August, Barbara
Tuchman.
Yeah. She wrote one called Stillwell and the American Experience in China.
Read it.
Aha. So you have the same opinion, basically, of old Vinegar Joe that I have when it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, he was unlistened to.
Yep. And as a young man, he served with an infantry unit in China, I think the 15th Regiment, and he learned the language and walked the country as a young man. So he, you know, he had a respect for the people, and well, I think Mao went nuts too. I think Mao got, you know, because he really was a leader during the Long March, and Chiang Kai-shek's men were surrendering by the droves. A lot of those submachine guns and such that the Chinese had in Korea, guess where they got them? It all comes, in fact, Paul Butterfield did an album on his second set, he did a song called It All Comes Back, and I'll just let it go with that and let the night go and let somebody else get up here and yak. But it seems this is what happens, what goes around comes around, as they used to say, and it all comes back, Bob.
And everything old is new again.
Yeah, you got it. You take care.
All right, Bill, you have a good night. Good talking to you, as always.
Thank you.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. A little bit of catch-up. Jay writes with a trenchant observation going back to Larry Pratt, Gun Owners of America, Gun Goobers of America. Jay asks, are these happy Africans he's talking about anything like the happy African Americans the Duck Dynasty poor white trash guy used to pick cotton with? I don't know, but the mindset is distinctly similar. And Fritz with a note, something that I had seen mentioned elsewhere as well that kind of makes me go, ew. Bless his little heart, Ed Schultz has decided it's time to build the Keystone XL pipeline. No, really. It is time to build it, he says. Why? Why? Because it's safer to transport it through a pipeline than on trains. I think I said that a month or so ago, that would be the argument. Look, the trains are blowing up. We better build the pipeline. Oh, you betcha. How about we leave that toxic shit alone? Canada doesn't want the pipeline going across Canada, and they don't want it going across. Well, and I mean, that's, I don't know, maybe I just committed a Larry Pratt. I don't think it, the Canadian from Canada doesn't want, no. But it does seem to be there's quite a hue and cry against the idea of building a pipeline to get that stuff to the coast so it can be put on board a ship in, say, Vancouver. Yeah, you get the idea. But yeah, really? That beats the pants off of me. And there's more stuff for Titanic Tuesday. Believe you me, there is more. And if you just thought we'd gotten to the conversation portion of the program and you could put away the duct tape and the tennis ball, get it back out. We're going to take a break because it is Tuesday. It is Titanic Tuesday on the horn, which means, of course, that we have in the offing Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen with the Green News Report. And, of course, your calls if you wish to participate in the ongoing conversation. And you are ever so welcome to do so. 304-658-3333 is the number. If you want to reach out via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn on Skype. If you've never sent me a contact request, please do so. I'll okay it and we'll go forward because I can generally tell when it's people who want to engage in the conversation as opposed to those, hello, I am seeing your profile and am thinking you are a sincere man with whom I want relationship. Those are pretty obvious. Yeah. So break. And then back. We're still looking for 11 folks at $10 a piece to help us meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge this evening. The offer is still on the table if folks would like to meet it. We're $110 away. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
So green, I can stare for a thousand years, colder than the moon. It's been so long, and I've been putting with gasoline. See these eyes so
Tuesday, February 4, 2014.
There's an enormous amount of political pressure within the Beltway to approve this project.
Keystone XL pipeline moves one step closer to approval.
Rain, incessant rain.
Britain pummeled by record floods. Another coal-related spill contaminates drinking water in North Carolina. Plus, the Arctic winds again. For now, Shell Oil drops plans to drill this summer.
All of those victories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Poor Atlanta. I love Atlanta. What a thing they went through. Did you see that? Drivers were stranded. Traffic was at a standstill. And everybody there was asking the same question. What did we do to piss off Chris Christie?
Yep. This is your Green News Report.
Oh, I kid, Chris Christie.
Okay, Desi Doyen, as we go to air today, word is inside the Republican caucus, they are deciding whether or not to tie an increase in the debt limit to the president's approval of the Keystone XL pipeline.
Oh, Republicans are holding hostages again, are they?
They are indeed.
Well, it seems unlikely Obama will fall for that, but we'll have more on Keystone XL in a moment. First, some quick headlines. Another toxic spill thanks to coal. In North Carolina, a broken pipe from a huge coal ash waste pond spilled toxic sludge and wastewater into the Dan River near Eden, North Carolina. Coal plant owner Duke Energy waited 24 hours to tell the public. Water treatment plants say it shouldn't affect water quality for now.
This is from a coal ash waste pond, the waste that they store in great big ponds that are incredibly toxic and will poison the drinking water and everything else if they leak, and now we have a leak.
Right, and they're mostly unregulated by the federal government.
Why regulate safe drinking water?
Insane record flooding continues in Britain.
The worst tidal surge in 60 years, and rain, incessant rain.
After record relentless rainfall refuses to let up, scientists say that chronic flooding shows the UK's plans to harden their infrastructure against rising sea levels due to climate change will not be sufficient. But some good news. Shell Oil has again postponed their plans to drill for oil in the harsh extremes of the Arctic for the second summer in a row. That's after their nearly disastrous attempt back in 2012. Shell's new CEO suggests they may abandon the effort altogether.
This is after Shell's comedy of errors where their rigs kept crashing, running into ice. They had to call it off early. Now they're saying, maybe it's not such a good idea to tear up the Arctic like that just because, it's melting.
That's pretty much it. Now on to the Keystone XL. The State Department waited until late on a Friday to release its final environmental impact report on the controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline from Canada. The key question, does it meet the threshold for approval that President Obama set in his historic climate action speech back in June?
National interest will be served only if this project does not significantly exacerbate the problem of carbon pollution.
Billions of dollars in oil profits and the planet's climate are riding on that word, significant, and this environmental impact report is something of a Rorschach test for both critics and opponents.
Wait, I only heard billions of dollars in profit. The rest of that part was blah, 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 blah.
Well, put it very basically, the State Department confirms that the pipeline would contribute to total global emissions. But the State Department says Canada's going to dig up those tar sands regardless. So this single pipeline project would not make that much of a difference to global emissions. That gives Obama a little bit of wiggle room either way.
So in other words, what they're saying is, hey, these dirty tar sands are going to be exploited whether we put them through a pipeline or whether we put them on trains. So whether we have the pipeline or not does not substantially increase carbon emissions.
That's essentially what they're saying, but opponents of the pipeline disagree. And they add that if Canada is going to dig up these tar sands regardless of whether the pipeline is built, then why are we in America putting our water supplies and lands at risk so Canada can ship oil to China? How is that in the national interest?
If you're going to ask intelligent questions, I don't know where to go from here, Desi.
Well, the White House is giving no indication either way, but in an interview with Bill O'Reilly of Fox News, President Obama did debunk the outlandish jobs claims peddled by the fossil fuel industry.
Keystone Pipeline, new study comes in, 42,000 jobs. You're going to okay it, I assume.
Well, first of all, it's not 42,000. That's not correct. It's a couple thousand to build the pipeline.
And in fact, the president was being generous there. The State Department report actually says 50 permanent jobs can be expected from the pipeline. Not hundreds of thousands, not 42,000, not even a couple of thousand, but 50.
And there were hundreds of vigils in 49 states to protest the Keystone XL pipeline on Monday, calling on President Obama to fulfill those promises to take action against climate change. The State Department must now decide whether the pipeline is in the national interest. The public gets 30 days to comment, starting now. Other agencies will weigh in. No decision is expected before early summer.
For much more on that and the other things John Kerry is going to turn tail on, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report and to celebrate 10 years of bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Really? Brad? Desi? Kansas? Really? Yeah, okay. Quick update before jumping right back to the phones. Hi, this is The Horn, Hour 3 of Titanic Tuesday. Just to let you know, in all the stories I saw about the coal ash dump, the poisonous coal ash dump in Eden, North Carolina, they said, you know, how did they put it? Duke Energy said an unsubstantiated amount, an unknown amount, blah, 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 blah. Well, if you dig down a little bit, goodness me, it turns out that as much as 22 million gallons of coal ash may have been poisoned into the Dan River. Yeah. So, because among other things, people who had seen the Dan River after the, said the river turned black. Not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. So, no, Duke Energy tried to make it sound insubstantial, but no, it wasn't. And just a few days before that, a few million gallons of sewage got dumped into the Haw River in North Carolina. And the State Department of Environmental Protection didn't notify anybody for more than 2 days, which turns out to be a violation of the law. But, you know, what the hell? It's just a little garbage, right? To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Yeah, so that was a blowout. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I did.
Oh, it's hilarious. No, I just they definitely look old. My God, you know?
Old and big and immobile and lethargic. Yeah. And.
Yeah, that was a... Well, I didn't even finish watching it. It was so lame. I just thought, oh, boy, this is not... But it was funny, though, what little I did see of it, because they just outplayed them. So, I mean, shit, I'm sure if the 49ers had played the Broncos, it would have been more of the same, huh?
They were so exposed.
Too young, man. Too young and too fast.
It just blazing. On both sides of the ball, too.
That's what I mean. I mean, all the sort of gibberish they're going on about Wilson not playing very well towards the mean. Please, give me a break. He did exactly what he needed to do.
I love the commentary early in the game. Well, Bill, the Broncos defense and Jack Del Rio said they need to force Wilson to roll to his left. Well, sure enough, he did. He rolled to his left, rolled out of the pocket, and, you know, went for 30 yards.
No, I mean...
How's that working out?
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, I don't even know what to say about the Broncos. That was, kind of embarrassing, huh?
Oh, although Peyton got a little testy when he was asked after the game if it was embarrassing. That's insulting.
Why? Just because they made it there, that means that it's not embarrassing?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys in there that really put out a lot of hard work to get here.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but yeah, he was getting his Herman on, though.
Oh, no, it was, yeah, anyway, I mean, that was, I was laughing when that freak brought the 9/11, that whole thing.
What was that?
So that was hilarious because, I mean, the security, it's like all that money they spent. You know what I mean? It's just a bunch of just security theater, a bunch of BS, and another way for the rentiers to get money. You know what I mean? It's non-ending.
Yeah, and yet this guy walks up, takes over. I forget who it was that was at the microphone. He still had his jersey and pads on.
Yeah, I don't know. I was too busy laughing. Then
did you see the look on his face? Like, what? What, huh?
Yeah. No, the whole thing, it was just like, what? Now, you know, it, yeah, so much for there. All I could think of was like, well, what happened to all that security? And the other thing was, I guess it was either Homeland Security or someone, you could see their password and username login for their sort of computer. Did you see that photo?
No.
Yeah, that was funny, too. So, I mean, the only the real upside, we didn't have to see that fat bastard Christie because, he had to keep a DL. I bet he was hating every minute of it, too, you know?
Oh, you know.
Oh, God. But, I don't know.
I mean, there was a cutaway shot showing Sir Paul McCartney watching the game. I mean, really? Paul's into the NFL?
Wow. Bizarre. Well, no, I mean, yeah. I mean, isn't it just another place for the global elite to meet?
Yeah, one of these days they'll have the Super Bowl in Davos and just get it over with.
Well, yeah, you know, something like that. But I don't know. You know, at least they had somebody under 50 for the halftime show, so that was new.
Yeah, and you know, I thought Bruno Mars turned in a decent performance.
Yeah, it was good. It was
high energy.
Right. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm like that age too, but you know, it was nice to see something a bit, you know, kind of.
Yeah, rocking those mid to late 50s lame jackets with the Little Richard hair James Brown moves. I mean, it was pretty. Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, I mean, I don't really have anything else to say about it. I suppose the football season is done now.
Yeah, now it's downhill to base downhill to the opening of, well, March Madness.
Well, No, but I mean, I don't really understand these, these sort of rich assholes. They really are sort of keeping their foot in the mouth. I mean, Elway, is he tripping with his face? You know, that comment was like, I'm so glad they lost. Oh,
yeah, well, that sealed it for me.
On your safety net, how's that net feeling now, you asshole?
Yeah, did you take any cash for clunkers money at your car lot, John?
Oh, it's just the same old story. It's like, how much, you know, I'm sick of, like, being sort of lectured to or, you know, even hearing their opinions. Just shut up, you know?
Yeah, I didn't run the audio, but as soon as I saw it before the game, it kind of solidified where I was in my rooting posture because, well, you know, Denver, Seattle, you know, I'm not a natural follower of either. But I'd been kind of inclined away from Denver just so I didn't want to hear the litany of Peyton Manning is the greatest man ever to touch a football since it was first blown up.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, and not only that, but I mean, I wasn't too bothered either way at first, but it's just kind of.
But then Elway just did it for me. I'm like, you're an ass.
Yeah, I'm just saying, oh no, you know who wants to know? I just am sort of, it's just really quite disturbing when the sort of bottom is, is visibly coming out from the middle class, and you know they're just sort of stepping up the rhetoric, and it's kind of like, wow, you know, why don't you guys shut the fuck up? But no, it seems to be ramping up. So,
they're just sort of rubbing people's faces in it. I don't know if you saw, I think it was an article, New York Times maybe, or maybe
the... About who shops now?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you annihilate wages and, money printing that destroys regular folks' purchasing power. And, you know, with the inflation, you never talk about food and fuel. You know, and it's kind of like, well, you know, people don't have it. And of course, they're just marketing to the top 20%.
But that's going to be bad. The largest single employer in the United States, granted, at crap wages and on crap terms, is Walmart.
Yeah, and they bitching about losing, you know, and that's why I was laughing. I'm like, oh, what, you're going to blame the weather and food stamp and not your fucking horrible wages? Come on. I mean, the whole thing was just laughable. And it's like, well, what do you expect to happen? I mean, these people live in a fantasy world. The Laffer curve is for real, and their trickle down is for real. In the meanwhile, you see what goes on. I mean, it's definitely turning into a Guatemalan model quite rapidly. It's like, oh, God.
If not the Argentinian one?
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, I saw that article, too, and I just thought, okay.
You know, dude sitting there. Well, you know, we're not spending. I was at least able to buy new golf clubs.
Oh my God!
And it was just kind of puke inducing.
Yeah, the whole thing is just, you know, it's I mean, it's all really disturbing because I can't believe that. Well, I can't believe it, and I think everyone should just, you know, just realize what we're dealing with because, you know, the fact that Obama's going to sign that farm bill should tell anyone who's paying attention to everything they need to know, because there's no reason for us to be cutting food stamps, $90 off of every household that uses food stamps. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, well, but we also understand, of course, that the multiplier effect is in play, so it's more than $90, isn't it? I mean,
I'm just saying, yeah, it's outrageous, and it's going to cause, you know, big losses to, corporate losers, you know, as the government picks their winners and losers. I mean, Walmart will continue to suffer, and jobs will be lost because people can't spend. I mean, it's, you know, and Obama is like, you know, part of me is like, wow, what is the problem here? You just veto it and make them do it again, you know? It's not that difficult. And you know, why are you signing it?
I think the answer there is that it had Democratic support in the Senate.
Well, you know, but has he vetoed a bill yet?
Not that I recall.
incredible, you know. I just think just in terms of a presidency. I'm not really.
And yet the numbers came out about the deficit, that it's shrunken dramatically. Of course, at the cost of people who like to eat food.
Right. I mean, that's what it is. It's just austerity. That's all it is, and it's really disturbing.
But if I read it the right way, even though the deficit has gone down and has gone down brutally on the backs of the poor, I think we can agree. The numbers say that it's going to start expanding again in 2017, kind of no matter what.
Well, because
what gets slashed then, Sandra?
Well, there's no real expansion going on now. I mean, you know, it's just we've blown the opportunity. If you're going to be printing money, to borrow at those low interest rates, we didn't do that, and so now the interest rates are going to start going up again in the U.S. We missed that boat. I mean, the whole thing is just, you really got to scratch your head and think, I mean, these people are they're incompetent along with satisfying, you know, ideologies that don't even make any sense.
Well, that's exactly it. And, of course, the right wing is just thrilled. They see, look, we made the deficit fall.
Well, it doesn't really matter when you have, what is it? In 2003, you had like 66% work participation. It's now down to 62. So the percentage of people working is shrinking. So if you factor that in, the unemployment rate is like 11.8%, Bob. It's not 6 or whatever they're kind of claiming it to be. So, I mean,
I thought the chronic unemployment rate was higher than 11.
Well, I mean, if you look at the I don't know what the term is. It's like 3 and 6, U6. Then it's probably more than that. But I just mean there's a, you know, their own metrics they're not really utilizing to give the full picture.
And yeah,
and also. You know, we seem to be, you know, it's like, what's the thing I was reading about? It's like, well, capitalism exploiting you, but what is it going to be like when you can't even get exploited anymore? And that's where we're headed, to that eliminationist sort of neoliberal endgame, when they have to start eliminating people. So that's pretty scary.
And then at the same time, this, what was it, CBO report comes out, Sandra, about the effects of the Affordable Care Act a few years down the road?
Well, yeah, but see, that can be viewed differently. I mean, I don't know. I'm not taking it as some job killing. I'm taking it as people may have the chance to get the fuck away from some shit-ass job. There's that factor.
Yeah, well, I think, but I mean, you know that's going to be the talking point.
Well, no, that's not, yeah, the talking point is, you know, Obamacare, some job killing, blah, 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 but I mean, to me, if you can reduce your workload at some shit job that you were keeping only because you need it and desperately have to have the health care, now you can find some other way of getting the same coverage but work less, what would you do?
Sure.
Right. I mean, I just, you know, whatever. They're gonna.
But I wonder if they did. Is there any way to score what that would look like if we were dealing with single-payer health care and not relying on things like number of hours worked and the bullshit mechanics of the for-profit insurance industry?
Yeah, it would be more dramatic because, listen, if you had that kind of health care that was taken care of, you know, with your taxes allocated differently, let's look at it like that, you would have people moving all around the country to where there's work. You know, just be a whole different dynamic going on. So, you know, it's, I mean, it's also painful to watch the way it's structured now, because there's going to be too many losers, and there's still millions of people who can't get a look-see, and there's still the Republicans who are sort of sentencing people to death without any accountability, and it's just kind of, I mean, that's really strange to me that, I mean, maybe that's going to pick up in a few months, but I don't see how people, if you're in Kentucky and you're right next door and you see them people poor-ass people in Kentucky going to the damn doctor, how that's going to be looking for after a while.
Right. Yeah. People are going, I mean, people might get kind of fond of that.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I think that it might start being a bit problematic. I mean, you know, when you have John Kasich is going to be looking like the model of Republican that they're going to have, you know, why is that possible? Because, you know, he's expanded it in Ohio.
Yeah, they've got it. And crazy old hatchet face Jan Brewer, she bought in,
right,
didn't she?
And she fought a really interesting, she screwed over people in her own party to have it done, too, which is interesting. I thought that was, I mean, that whole story is very interesting to sort of check out when you get a chance, because it wasn't just, I'm going to do it. She had to do a number and join forces with, you know, enemies and all this sort of stuff to get it done. And she don't take no prisoners. I'm scared of her. But it's good for people in Arizona.
Well, sure it is. And it'll be good for anybody who can get it.
Right. I'm just saying that the Republicans who decided to offer it, you know, with the loss of Christie, they're going to have to look at those types, I think, you know, down the road there.
Well, I still think, I think Scott Walker is just trying to lay in the weeds and avoid indictment and get reelected.
No, but did they take the expansion there?
No.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's incredible when you think about the political history of that state, where they're at now. Wow, it boggles the mind.
Well, it was Tommy Thompson was governor of Wisconsin when they entered into what's called up there Badger Care, which was really pretty good Medicaid.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know. Yeah, that low life, he's going to pop up because he has all sorts of money behind him. But he's such a snake in the grass. I don't, you know, you think there's a national appeal for that?
Oh, I think there's a national appeal for anything the Koch brothers put their money behind, and he's their guy.
Ugh. Well, anyway, I mean,
Of course, it could always be, and, you know, this is he's just about become my bête noir, you know.
Right.
Jebby still wants to be president, Sandra.
Oh, right. You know, I don't, I guess in Texas, they won't give you any health care, but they might give you some weed, huh? Is that, that's what's kind of, they make a noise about that down there, I hear.
Yeah.
Well, you know, all of it is a bit disturbing, but, and yeah, that is the most disturbing, the sort of actually denying people access to, you know, life-saving care. That disturbs me to no end. But also, do you actually think that Obama's going to say no to that pipeline?
No, I think that decision gets made probably the second or third week of December of this year.
Yeah, well, at any rate, that's not to say that they might open up a real can of worms, because, I mean, this sounds like there's some pretty radical people who, you know, are willing to do a fair amount. I just don't think it's going to be that easy. You know, I think he might face a bit of a, I don't know.
No, that softball report from the, from the EPA, was it? That said, no appreciable increase in global climate change because of this pipeline. That's just crazy.
Well, I thought that there was more to the report than that. Actually, I heard that it was a bit more.
Oh, there's a whole lot more. I think it's 11 volumes.
Yeah, and the media is going to, you know, the corporate media is going to give it a certain spin, but. It's neither here nor there. It's down to this president, and you know, I just am not expecting to be shocked. You know, I mean, he seems to be of the mind that, well, the oil is going to be moved somehow, so it might as well be done down here, right? And I feel like somebody needs to slap that Ed Schultz. Damn, he's the fuck.
Oh, what? Yeah, because of the well, they're going to keep on putting the bucket, but the thing is, they're going to keep putting the Bakken crude on trains, are they not?
Oh, no, but I mean, the other thing that people keep not mentioning, which I think is an interesting aspect, is that, well, no, there's a huge glut of oil that they really want to move, and the pipe is a way for them to move it and raise prices. So if they can get it out of the North America, they can start raising prices.
Yeah, what's a, just out of curiosity, what's a gallon of 87 octane going for around you these days?
It's like $3.50.
Yeah, it's dropped to $3.33 here.
Well, I mean,
and they've got to be, you know, they like their $5 a gallon gas. They do.
And so that's what, you know, that's what, of course, we're not hearing about, but that's kind of what could conceivably happen if they're able to ship it to the open market.
Well,
and this whole lie that some guy was trying to get it through that thick Schultz head that, well, no, the pipeline going to the East Coast, the West Coast of Canada is dead because they don't have enough. You know, the pushback is too much. They want this one.
Well, see, Asa out in Vancouver is telling me that it's that the pipeline to the West Coast is. He says they're, you know, they're hell and be damned. They're gonna. He said, make no mistake, it. They're gonna build a pipeline here too. They're calling it the Northern Gateway Pipeline. It'll run from Alberta to coastal BC and is going to carry the same poison as KXL, and it's the same group of slime building it in Enbridge. Meanwhile, there's another report on a big old section of Trans-Canada natural gas pipeline from back in 2011 where the section that, I guess one section that was examined was 95, or maybe 2009, 95% corroded.
Right.
And we can trust them. Why?
Well, no, but I mean, I don't understand. I guess I'm, you know, maybe I'm just kind of confused, but I would think that that water supply that it runs so close to, you know, would have made it a dead deal. How are they justifying that? I mean, what is the argument for, don't they need that water for farming and drinking?
You would think.
I just don't understand how this pipeline is able to negate. Isn't that water for like 30 million people?
You're talking about the Ogallala Aquifer?
Yeah.
It's water for the entire Midwest.
Right. Okay. So millions. Of, I mean, because I was just kind of confused. I'm like, hello? Why in the world is this even a possibility? I don't know, Bob. I just.
Well, and Frank just sent a question via email asking, is it a coincidence that the Panama Canal will be widened at about the same time as the KXL pipeline is built?
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, that's so they can get the huge. I mean, that's. China's building that, right?
Yeah. And Frank says the world's tanker fleet consists of ships too large for the old canal operation, but not the new one.
Yeah, no. That's been going on, and it's all sort of, it's very scary what it portends, because Canada already sounds like it's a petrol state, like way out of control.
What, one step away from just joining OPEC and having done?
Well, yeah, just a totally sort of maniacal leadership is there. Just bizarre.
But I'm with you. I'm not expecting any bold leadership out of the White House about. I'm sorry if it seems negative, but I just don't see him having that courage.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm saying I haven't seen anything in his presidency that would tell me that. This decision is going to be anything but him parsing it and then throwing out some sort of smokestack regulation at the same time. You know how he does that shit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, so yeah, it's just kind of, and with him talking about income inequality and pushing the, he couldn't even say fast track. He said trade, the other word for it, you know, because people are aware of fast track. So he came out with some other term, but it still means fast track. So I don't, you know, they're all just, beyond corrupt.
You know, I could, and I mean, I think it's pretty obvious now that I live in a place where the working definition of beyond corrupt is about as obvious as it could possibly be. But in a way, you look at it and you think, you know, okay, there's going to be some corruption in the system. But for God's sakes, get something right once in a while.
Well, no, I know. Well, when the thing, when it's so corrupt that a decision like this, which is so blatantly wrong, is, you know, where people are going to have to sort of, destroy property to possibly stop it, like, you know, physically put their body there, and then they're going to be then it's going to be a foreign company snatching Americans' property using, I don't know what they're using to claim jurisdiction over their people's property. I didn't know that foreign corporations could do that, but I guess they can.
I didn't know either, but is there much that a foreign corporation can't do now?
Well, exactly. No, I mean, you know, so...
I mean, this is rollerball, right?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch when they start taking people's farming land and stuff to lay this pipe. So, you know, and they want to build it within 2 years. So this is going to be, as soon as Obama says, they'll start, I mean, they'll have it built, you know.
Jesus.
And... You know, I mean, that whole interview with O'Reilly was so disturbing because, well, it's 40,000 jobs, right? I mean, he wouldn't, and you know, Obama's like, no, it's not, but, you know, Bill O'Reilly still said, oh, it's 42,000, and that'll be a yes, right? I mean, the whole thing was just, you know, very little from Obama on it. It was just gruesome.
No, the only pushback was the, they keep believing that stuff because you keep telling them that stuff.
Well, you know, that's still his own, at this point, just his own sort of thin skin. You know, he didn't push back on anything that's of importance.
No. And of course, afterward, of course, everything on Fox is, you know, what's he hiding? Why isn't he telling us the truth about Benghazi?
Oh, God. I mean, it's, to me, I don't even know what that's about. I mean, I know what Benghazi is, but I don't understand, you know, the obsession with it. It's so weird.
Well, the obsession goes back to before the 2014 election. I mean, 2012 election, when they had that big sit-down roundtable and decided that Benghazi was going to be the hill that they fought on, and that they were going to—I mean, it's just it's nothing. It's pure marketing. That's all it is.
Yeah. Well, it's really. Well, anyway, I mean, I suppose. So you're saying that one of the reasons they're going to say yes is to cover the Senate, the back. Side of some of the Senate people, right?
Yeah, on the farm bill. I mean, for God's sakes, Debbie Stabenow chairs the committee that cut food stamps by $5 billion.
Right. Well, yeah. Oh, God.
And I just, you know, I'm so not over that. I mean, I remember talking about that story the evening that it broke.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. I mean, there's no way that Democrats should be associated with cutting food stamps at all. I mean, they should have said no. We need to raise it $25 billion and then negotiate. I mean, the Democrats can never come up with anything remotely like that, where they say no. We want to expand any part of the safety net. They should be trying to expand it and then go from there. But they never. They always start from a cut.
Right, because of the, you know, what I was talking about last night, the essential bargain that tied this all together, where. You know, we were going to let the retailers get their beaks wet, and then we're going to let the financial administrators get their beaks wet. That all fell apart in the face of the teabaggers, because they just want to put bricks through windows.
Yeah, no, I mean, and punish struggling people. I mean, it's very sadistic, and I never forget that the majority of them assholes are millionaires and more. I mean, people try to. Pretend that that's not a reality. So we're being ruled by the rich and being fucked over.
Yeah, but they are using the culture war cannon fodder, because you know the lady sitting there in her hover round mobility scooter with her get your hands off my government get your government hands off my Medicare sign teabagger, and she ain't no millionaire. And those are the people they're relying on to tear all of this down.
Yeah, well, you know, people, except people who are paying attention, they don't really realize that we're living in, the economy is a plutonomy now. I mean, just straight up.
Yeah, where the middle class can't buy diddly, but, you know, the investment banker can get a new set of golf clubs.
Yeah, no, it's just, and you know, I mean, but I am finding it funny, and I say funny because I'm laughing, that you had this sort of spate of bankers dying. I just think that's interesting, like four of them, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like something out of a I don't know, Sherlock or, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm like, oh, it's a start.
Oh, by the way, Mark just dropped a note in on the Panama Canal. He said, that's a Bechtel project, Friends of TransCanada's owner, Koch Industries, Freedom Industries. There you go.
Yeah. No. Bechtel is the same company that rebuilt Iraq. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And as I've noted, the Boy Scout camp over here, a few miles away from me.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, was... they also, yeah, I think they built, these are, you know, some huge bridge over in the Bay Area, but it's all too much. But anyway, listen, I have to go.
Well, I'm glad you hollered in, and I was thinking of you during the Super Bowl, and enjoyed a couple of tweets back and forth.
Oh yeah, okay. Well, have a good evening.
All right, take it easy, Sandra.
Bye. Bye.
Sandra calling from Sacramento area. Thanks going out to Nydia. Thank you very, very much. Nydia closed the gap on meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. We are down now to only $60 to go to finish that off. It would be awfully nice if we could do that, because if we can do that, that means we've kept even with February thus far. It's about 8 minutes before the hour, and way too much... Well, way too little time to really get into a whole bunch of detail. But the Keystone thing is being ballyhooed, as I mentioned before. And Sandra's right. While that report is 11 volumes, something like 11 volumes in size, the only thing that's being hollered is that, well, the government now says it won't be such a bad deal for the climate if we... But there's far more to it than that. And the realities that developing the tar sands, you know, what a moonscape, Jesus. That the tar sands, well, the health risks associated with it are profound. It turns out that something I had to learn about a couple of years ago relating to mountaintop removal, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are really, really bad for you, according to the National Academy of Sciences, well, it looks like PAH emissions are about two or three times higher than they have been recorded than in environmental reviews. It means there's going to be a lot more of them. That means more cancer. Yay, more cancer. And yet there's still a debate, there's still a discussion going on about this craziness. How? It stymies them. And nobody's going to make any money on there's going to be a lot of money made. But it's not going to benefit American consumers. I think that's what I was trying to say. One damn bit. Gas prices will go up. All this stuff will go to China. The toxins and poisons will float back across the Pacific to the West Coast. Where's the win for anybody who aren't the Koch brothers or... Yeah, you get the idea. Our buddy Jay Cruzen sent something along last night that seems to fit in this larger discussion. An email with the subject line, and by the way, Jay Cruzen is a poet. And an email arrived, subject line, Keystone XL approved. And in this poem, Jay Cruzen writes, "So where were you on that day? Did you turn your back? Did you walk away? Did you turn your back and look to the past and think everything you knew would last? Did you watch the sun rise in the sky not knowing how your children would die? Were you so concerned about your daily take that you didn't care what future you'd make? Did you turn a blind eye and just not care if your grandchildren could even breathe the air? Did you know? Did you care? Were you fooled by the liars who said the facts weren't there? Please tell me that before I go into the darkness. You already know. I'm the great-grandson, you'll never know, but everything you did to us, it shows. And see, I think that's why the tar sands pipeline is such an easy call for First Nations people who have that seven generations out obligation. There's no way you can be okay with a proposition as dodgy as trusting a corporation, even though the Supreme Court says it's an immortal person. There's no way you can trust a corporation to get something right seven generations out. The only way to get that right seven generations out is not to do it. It seems pretty self-evident to me. And apparently self-evident to First Nations peoples. The only people it's not self-evident to are the people who think about money more than they do life itself. So, thanks everybody for everything this evening. Thank you for your calls, your emails, your communications by Twitter and Facebook. Thank you for your kind contributions. We have just reached, thanks to a kind anonymous contribution, we are within $10 of reaching Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And that is a big deal indeed. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to John Fox for all the tweaks to the website. I'm having a heck of a good time with that now. You can always go over and we try to aggregate a little news over there of stuff that might be interesting. That's going to be something I'm going to be trying to do every day. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Man, more than 10 years now. 12 years. This is the 12th year of the White Rose Society. Preserving progressive talk on the Internet. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. Go to ACHECT.org, go to the Take Action page, and contact your member of the House of Representatives and tell them you want them to sign on to H.R. 526. Because what H.R. 526 will do is help us begin to understand why it is, how it is, that people in the Mountaintop Removal Sacrifice Zone get so poisoned so awfully, so often, and then provides a mechanism to stop it. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.